Yep. Hey, everyone. I'm not sure if now's the moment to talk at length, but I guess I'll just introduce myself. Some may not quite know who I am. I've been involved in this reality for my literal entire life, since the day I was born. And we can unpack what that means, as I have my father here on the call, and my family has been engaged in a pretty extraordinary set of life experiences. Possible contacts and possibly even a message, just not just for Marshall or our family, but to help the broader community come to terms with what this visitation is that we're experiencing. So I've been in that for a long time now. I'm more recently really stepping out more to talk about the NHI and the NHIs in plural. And the agendas at play, kind of the nuances of the interaction that's undertaking, they're being that they are undertaking with human beings, and what that means for us, especially as disclosure becomes ever greater possibility. So here to talk about all that.
And I'm here to really present some extraordinary things that have been revealed to me and that I've been carrying for a very long time. I've been a student of this for 35 years, and I really come from the spiritual aspects. My greater community spirituality, spirituality of the universe, is really where my heart is. But the universe is a place of great hazard and opportunity, a great where all levels of consciousness exist, and certainly is beyond our notions of what logic is and what reality is to a certain degree. So I bring with it a real journey, and I hope I can make a contribution with you here today.
Up on it, and then it came to Reed, and then it came to you. And the whole idea is that ufology has a bravery problem.
Great. Would you like me to talk specifically about that bravery problem, or kind of back up and cover those points that Tom introduced?
I think you go wherever you want to go with it.
Okay, good. We'll do. So good to be with you all. I think I want to take up that challenge that Tom just mentioned of going a step beyond just that academic, what is happening, into what does it mean, and even what do we need to do about it? Because I would assert that after 75 years of active study into the phenomenon that has been taking place in a very unique fashion,
All right,
probably.
everyone. Go ahead, Reed.
Okay. Yeah. I'll keep going on the track I was on. So, we have this modern wave of visitation taking place, and I believe it is quite distinct from ancient forms of contact that I do believe also have occurred. I think the reason they have come goes a lot way. It goes a long way in kind of suggesting the intent for which they're here. So, what is the context on Earth at this time in the last 100 years that has shifted concurrent with this entrance into our space by this non-human intelligence? So, we can get into the modern versus ancient, but I'll just skip right past it. I'll say that we're in a modern visitation that is distinct from ancient forms of visitation. We've had 75 plus years to study it, and as we all queue up, kind of at the breadline, waiting for handouts from, the deep state, defense establishment, intelligence community, at least in the United States, I think there's a different line to form. And that is a lineup to individually and collectively, if possible, come to a starting assessment of this visitation. And I would assert that we have all the evidence we need already, without any more, to come to a starting assessment, not a final conclusion, but literal starting point from which we can iterate and entertain new evidence, new whistleblower testimony, et cetera. But the fact that most of the UFO community remains kind of mired in possibilities and seems unwilling to land on more solid probabilities that are evidential, cautious, responsible, and logical, thus prohibiting the formation of a starting assessment, I think is a huge problem. And so my focus right now is helping people get to that starting line. Because we're in a race. We are not interacting with a mechanistic phenomenon right here that can just be analyzed over on our own human timescales. This is sentience. This is hyper-intelligent sentience, and it is operating in our world in ways that we are not capable of monitoring and managing and even mitigating And it has been doing so for decades. And so the longer we wait in this kind of cloud of confusion and do not come to greater levels of certainty iteratively based on both evidence, but also our human logical process, I think we're putting ourselves in a position of considerable risk. Risk is growing year by year. And to the extent that this visitation represents a threat to human survival or human interests, the risk is compounded even greater. So I think we can come to a starting assessment of this visitation. You know, a lot of my work is kind of thinking that through and helping people, you know, for now, those who are aware of this, but post-disclosure, you know, potentially many, many more people in their personal walk around of the phenomenon. And though I think, you know, we all begin with opening up to greater possibilities, going from a closed worldview that does not accept alien visitation, for example, as possible, we open up the aperture. We also ultimately need to close the aperture down and focus and come and bring the picture into focus. And this is largely what's not happening. So that said, I'd like to make the assertion that I think the most cautious, responsible, logical, and evidential starting assessment of this visitation is that we are being discovered by other forms of physical intelligence who are here with an agenda and an intent that is almost certainly counter to our own. This is species to species contact with competitive forms of intelligent life. I think that is truthfully the best starting assessment of the phenomenon. It's not to say it's the final conclusion. It's also not to say that's all that's out there or that's all that will ever come here. I don't think that's true. But I think it is the best place to start. And so obviously we're going to get into if that's true. Let's take that on as a premise. You know, what then might their agenda be? And there's so much we can bring in now with that assessment as indicative of that agenda. Obviously, let me just get going on that. You know, this presence, this NHI in our world, has been functioning with a high degree of secrecy and a very low degree of self-disclosure. So clearly they are opting to not be understood. And that is also a massive component as to why they are not understood. This is, again, not, you know, we're not studying a mechanistic phenomenon. We're studying a phenomenon that perceives our study of it and responds to us intelligently, that knows how to cover its tracks technologically and even psychologically in ways that might baffle us. And so, you know, this is kind of, you could call it cat and mouse, and we are not the cat. You know, we are dealing with a vastly greater intelligence than our own, but not one that is incomprehensible to us. I think that's a very dangerous assumption to make, that we cannot possibly understand it using, you know, our limited human anthropocentric views or our very kind of like 1.0 level consciousness. We absolutely must take on some sort of assessment in our own consciousness of what this force is and engage with it from there. So again, I believe we have this set of physical species in our human space, technologically advanced, psychologically advanced, employing a set of strategies and tactics in a bid to enact an agenda. Something brought them here, right? The motivation. And then once here, they formulated some sort of agenda to carry that out. And I think we can begin to consider what that agenda might be. I think, you know, the Allies of Humanity briefings received by Marshall here are a very important set of corroborating documents that really add weight to the assessment that we can make on our own already, not relying on any sort of telepathically transmitted alien message. We have enough to do this on our own. And to the extent that we refuse to, I think we really weaken ourselves. It's kind of like we're casting a subtle vote, not in favor of our human capabilities. If after 75 years of observation and intelligent study of this by numerous people, we cannot even assess what is probable, that's a big problem. And so if this is a message of empowerment, let it be that first and foremost, that we absolutely have the logical capabilities, the tools, the techniques to assess this, and then move from there. So, you know, I'm going to skip over a lot of what I might say about the different hypotheses regarding the being of the NHI, what they are, the origins of the NHI, where they're from, and the intent of the NHI. I'm not going to skip over that last one. I'm going to actually skip to that last one, and because I think that's where the conversation wants to go.
Reed, quickly, would you mind actually backing up just a little bit before we get to the rest of that? We're talking about a starting assessment, but I know there are people in the room who would actually disagree with the start of your assessment. Mm-hmm. And I would love to have any background. I heard you mention things like secrecy. What is your background that comes prior to this starting assessment? What made you start there? What is the information you have that actually brought you to your starting assessment?
Yeah, sure. Let's definitely go there. I did. I landed one data point, but not all the others. So secrecy is certainly one. I think there is absolute physicality to this phenomenon. These are objects or craft. Let's call it physical. And though there might be an extra dimensional component to that or a metaphysical component to that, the immediacy of it is that of a physical phenomenon in our physical earth environment, terrestrial atmosphere, hydrosphere, literally in the world. And, you know, I think caution is important here because I think, you know, there is vulnerability present in our world. We're a world of almost 8 billion divided humans, hundreds of countries, competing agendas, very different levels of technological and sociological development in the world. And so there are a lot of points of entry that cannot be monitored by us, the human species, and we have no collective human voice in the universe to even voice our human priorities. And so the possibility, you know, for the strategies of, you know, we'll get there in a minute, but divide and conquer, you know, are very easily enacted in our space. And so there's a lot of vulnerability in the world. And so the physicality of the phenomenon operating in our human space, undisclosed and with secrecy, I think for me lands me at a probable starting assessment that we are not dealing with something that is non-physical, that is inherently metaphysical, but something with physicality that poses risk. Now, whether it poses threat is kind of a later question. You know, risk can be inherent in an interaction no matter what the intent of both parties. And I see a lot of risk here. Our technological development is in a hockey stick right now, and it's almost out of our control when you consider AI, transgenics, you know, human surveillance, things that are quite truly out of our control. Another force that has mastered such technologies or even surpassed them could so easily come in and introduce, in a Trojan horse kind of fashion, their own slight adjustments to our own developments that really alter the human outcome in some pretty high-risk ways. So I think risk is there. I think there's also indication that these objects are intelligently controlled. They're not, I would go beyond objects. I would say that they are intelligently piloted craft of some kind, based on their movements, how they interact, you know, with us. And for example, military pilots in altercations, you know, in the airspace. So I think there is intelligence behind these physical phenomenon. And if I go kind of down my list here, you know, I look to the human interface with NHI. And though a lot of hard evidence is missing that would be conclusive of this being true, I think it is the probable assessment to make that human beings are physically making contact with other physical beings. These are the accounts that have been shared over so many years by contactees and abductees. They corroborate one another among people who have obviously never met, from different cultures and societies, different levels of, you know, technological involvement in the world. I was reading a contactee report on the CUFOS site last night, you know, by a herder in Argentina who was taken aboard a craft by three hybrid individuals, and all sorts of things were done to him. And this is an individual who definitely did not have a cell phone in the year 1977 when this happened. possibly had never made a phone call in his life. There was no internet. And so stories like that being corroborated across time and space across our human space are indicative that human beings are making some sort of physical contact with another physical being. If I go down the list even further, all these communications that people say that they've had with extraterrestrials, whether it's an in-person communication or a telepathically received communication, I don't know if we can take them all as gospel truth. We cannot. But one thing I note in these communications is that the beings very often say, we are physical creatures, aliens, beings from another star system. So, okay, if this phenomenon was angelic in nature, would angels lie about their angelic origins and being by saying they're aliens? You know, would that help the ontological shock? I don't think it would. I think it would hurt. I don't see a lot of reason for these entities to be lying when they say that they are other species from other star systems. If I may go down the list even further, you know, we have growing eyewitness, whistleblower testimony of crashed vehicles that have pilots, possibly even biologics. So, you know, all of this is not conclusive. It's not to say this shows without, you know, any doubt what the phenomenon is. It's suggestive of a starting point to me. And you can contest that starting point. You can introduce all sorts of other data points that matter most to you, and that's fine. You know, ancient astronauts and you know, the religious connection, and that's okay. I would still ask, does an angelic explanation or does a crypto-terrestrial explanation constitute the most responsible and cautious one to take as a starting point? Does it lower our guard? Does it unite the human species in ways that we know are needed? Not to say that, you know, the tail wags the dog and the outcome we want should dictate the hypothesis that we adopt at the outset, but the hypothesis that we adopt at the outset does predispose us to a certain journey. And if it's a hypothesis that pacifies us or makes us project our spiritual or religious beliefs onto the universe at large, hopefully, in a hopeful fashion, I think that disables the critical capabilities we have in terms of logic and caution and other things. So I present 8 criteria, which I feel should constitute what gets us from possibility past probability to starting assessment. And I'll just read those to you. And this is kind of, this is the light box upon which I put the X-ray, you know, that kind of lights up the data for me. Let me pull up my the right screen here. And feel free to interrupt me if I'm going on too long here. But these 8 criteria. So evidence, we all would agree, evidence is super important to understand the phenomenon. I think the argument for hard evidence is increasingly a dangerous one in terms of how evidence can be manufactured, manipulated, but also how our perception of evidence could potentially be manufactured or manipulated. Could we be made to see things that weren't there? Can we be prevented from seeing things that were there? So I think the hard evidence argument, which, by the way, works right into the hand of those who are the power brokers because they have all the hard evidence, they have the craft, they have whatever's been recovered. So this very public argument for hard evidence, understandable, but unfortunately, it is not a neutral argument, and it definitely shifts power in this equation. But I think we have a lot of eyewitness testimony. We have a lot of incidents of mass witnessing of a sighting. We have the contactee-abductee phenomenon. We have the reality of human mutilation and implantation, animal mutilation. We have this preponderance of purported messages from space. And there is consistency among them, which is interesting to note, but there is also a tremendous consistency of logical fallacy among them. You know, for example, you know, humanity is such a lowly form of life that it needs to be imprisoned, monitored, managed like cattle, or that this is a zoo planet or something like that. Any visitor to our world who makes a message like that, that is inherently an act of gaslighting, and an act of repositioning power and authority from native to foreign sources, super suspect. And the fact that it is in the preponderance of these messages, I also believe is suspect. And this is how I start to formulate an assessment about intent, because these start to look like the strategies of intervention, the strategies of how one intelligent nation, empire, civilization, tribe begins to move in on the environment and the resources of another. And of course, these are hyper-intelligent implementations of such strategies, but they do have a strong corollary to how we in this world, in our colonial history, for example, in the interaction between empire, have influenced one another, outbred one another, and supplanted one another. And you even see this beyond our human example in species-to-species interaction in nature. You know, there have been billions of species on Earth, and only 1% of them are alive today. Why? Because via contact and through environmental pressure and also cataclysmic events, such as those that triggered the former mass extinctions, you see how species tend to interact within an environment to gain access to those resources, to perpetuate their species, and how that leads to either elevation or diminishment and ultimately extinction. And I think there are corollaries in that that we need to be aware of. Again, none of this is to say this conclusively tells us what is happening. I think what it does is it is highly suggestive of the most logical and cautious place to begin. And I don't see folks identifying a starting point in their assessment and moving from there. Not everyone, but you know, for so many years, and Marshall, you can jump in here because you were a part of advocating such logic and such caution in the 2000s, 20 years ago. But even today, in some ways, you know, we're wandering even more broadly and widely upon the hillside, and this is becoming even more of an adventure in consciousness, and our own human needs and aspirations and unrequited desire for fulfillment is all being read upon what could be a physical visitation by competitive forms of life. And we are not getting our act together. We're definitely not seeing this for what it is. And the farther we push out this starting assessment, good luck making any conclusion. And if there's no conclusion or even a working conclusion, be it an adaptive one, we're pushing out taking a position, proposing action, getting down to doing anything about this. And so, you know, there are certain trends in the UFO community that I think, you know, they add to this kind of fracturing of what could be seen clearly and coherently into 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 shades of different interpretations. And you know, the cloud of dust gets kicked up even harder. And this is the smokescreen. And, you know, Marshall can talk about this, but it appears there is activity underway by the NHI to kick up that smokescreen to make it very difficult to perceive their presence and their activity and the overall agenda that activity is suggestive of. And who would know? There's very few people even talking about that. I mean, the NHI is not the controversy. The government is the controversy. And sometime in the last 20 years, there was a huge shift from thinking about what they are doing to being upset about what we are doing. And I don't think that's accidental. And so, again, we're operating in this inquiry, you know, not studying a virus or a bacteria or something that just does what it does at a genetic coding level. Okay, yes, other life forms are influencing their behavior at the level of consciousness, I would say for sure. But this is two orders magnitude greater. And we're not interfacing well, I don't think, as a human species in this contact event. And we're definitely not moving through the possibilities to the probabilities. And we're not generating any sort of kind of consensus understanding that could lead to consensus action. So those are some of my concerns. And I'm happy to pause there if you want to want me to keep going or back up a little.
Yeah, thanks, Reed. I'm going to say something very briefly, and then I'd love to hear from Tom and Marshall on this, you know, just this basic starting point that we have. So I personally do not think that the possibilities of origin that we spoke about, which is, you know, crypto, interdimensional, et cetera, I don't think that infringes whatsoever on your starting assessment. And I would also say that whether it is 100% physical or 100% consciousness or a little bit of both or both, that that infringes on your starting assessment either. I know that there is a sensitivity to your starting assessment as to origin and to what this exactly is, but I think we can still leave those up to possibilities and still move on to probabilities. On your list. I would love to hear from all three of you. And I think us just having a conversation is totally fine. I don't think we need hands right now. If we could have Reed, Tom, and Marshall just kind of jumping in on this, that would be awesome.
Well, I think I can take it from here, if I may. Reed's assessment, I think, is very valuable because there's confusion of levels here. And confusion of levels is a very difficult thing when you're aware of different levels, which many self-aware people are, that life has different levels. There's the psychic, there's the spiritual, there's the physical, there's the metaphysical. These are all different levels, and some of them actually operate on different rules and principles. For instance, I do not confuse the physical with the spiritual very often. The spiritual can infuse itself on the physical and does, but they're operating on completely different platforms. One is temporary, the other is permanent. One is operating outside of time, the other is completely bound within time. And so I don't confuse these two levels because it makes both of them less accurate to do so. So I look at the intervention as a purely physical, historical, biological event. First, now, what it means at other levels, I do consider that, but I don't confuse the levels, because when you do that, you get a blur. Life becomes a blur, and now you're not being really practical, but you're also not being really incisive. So, to stay out of that blur zone for me requires that I have this division of levels, and I think we need to focus on this as a species-to-species competition. They've been here for 75 years. They're not revealing their behavior, their activities, or their intent. They're taking people against their will, subjecting them to cruel and illegal processes, damaging them. I've been around many, many abductees through my work. Many of them come to work with me through the spiritual work. I'm not a therapist, so I don't regress them, but I see the damage being done here. They're mainly being used as resources. And of course, they try to think of it as a higher spiritual thing. It's redemptive. It's giving me new consciousness and all these things. But the fact of the matter is most of these people are very damaged. And they're also beset by living in a culture that doesn't recognize what they've been through or even accept it. So this confusion of levels thing, I think, is part of what muddies up the stream and approaching what really is an act of nature as much as anything, and is highly consequential and should not be confused with our hopeful and wishful thinking in any way. Okay. And I want to make one point that I know some people will might disagree with, but has been an eye-opener for me. And the Allies briefings actually don't speak about this directly, but it is certainly inferred in what they're communicating. But it was on my own realization that the intervention is not here for us. It's here for the world. We're just part of the resource of the world. Now, they can't live here because of atmospheric and biological hazard. So they need us to work for them. And in order for that to be possible, they need to begin a hybridization program that's now many generations old, to create for the future a new leadership for humanity that's bound to them, but looks like us and can function here. Hybrids, not just people who have had contact, but people who actually been re-engineered intellectually and emotionally through a process of hybridization. So, it's very clever. It's not what we would think, right? We think of Star Wars. That's our template. That's our template for life in the universe right there.
Sorry, Marshall. It looks like we have Dr. B.
No, that's okay.
Okay. So I should continue. I'll complete some thoughts here that I think are important and have given me an opportunity to both really acknowledge our spiritual nature. And many of the people here, perhaps all of you, I would consider to be greater community people, or people who were born with a history in the universe or a deep feeling or sense of it or sense of destiny or purpose in your life that is connected to it in some way, however that may be. I certainly feel that way about myself. So, but I think, you know, we're the native peoples of the New World. If we look at the history of what happened to native peoples of visitation from technically advanced other human nations, we know the outcome of that. And while this may be different, we should never forget that that is a template and should probably be our starting point, because history repeats itself. And, you know, in my view, the first visitors en masse, in a sense of being highly impactful, are going to be resource explorers, economic collectives, the outreach of greater nations that would not interfere with us directly for reasons I can discuss later, but are here to do the exploratory kind of dirty work for them. And I think this is really important for us to think about, because the only way that humanity is going to grow up and stop being adolescent and being fighting with each other constantly is to be challenged in this way. Otherwise, we're all trying to seek fulfillment from contact, which is ridiculous. And we're being challenged. And the challenge is what's going to uplift humanity. Not fulfillment and belief and ideology, and we're star people now, and we're all going to celebrate, you know, the star people of the universe and things like this. I'm telling you, people, if we don't get our act together, we're going to be mowed under. Not immediately, because they're playing the long game. We don't play the long game. They're playing the long game. They know from an atmospheric signature that we are going to change our climate, and that will probably reduce the human population by a phenomenal degree and create a cascading set of events. That plus the overuse of resources in this world and all the other environmental hazards and degradation that we have created on our own, neglectfully or willfully. So we're creating the condition that's going to make their ascendancy possible through all these things. So listen, what has nature and history taught us about Native people's contact with life from beyond its own shores? So let us always remember that as a lesson of life, not just a unique part of our history. It could be a part of the history of life in the universe. You know, we are living on a planet highly valued by others, and we're slowly destroying it. Also, think about this. We've been broadcasting out in the universe all of our degradation, our wars, the changes we're making to our world, our human suffering, everything for the discreet observer to watch and discern. So that after 100 years, well, they probably know more about our psychology than we do. They understand what we do and why we do it. We understand our flaws, our weaknesses, our tendencies. And so they can capitalize all these things to serve a hidden agenda, hidden from us. So, you know, you're not a visitor if you've been here for 75 years, undisclosed, unrevealing. That's not a visitor, people. That's an intruder. And they're not only just visiting, they are permanently here. They're planting themselves with an agenda. And so, this is a come to Jesus time. I don't mean that literally, but this is a time to get really real about being challenged as humanity, as all being challenged equally by the same exterior forces who are here to do what they think is probably the appropriate thing to do. If the human beings can't manage the planet, well, we'll have to manage it, and they can work for us until we don't need them anymore. So, which is kind of, I'm extrapolating this, but it kind of represents their behavior, the thinking behind their behaviors. We don't matter except that we're useful to them, and maybe not even permanently. So we have to get off our high spiritual horse. We have to get off our sense of we're so important in the universe that anyone would come here to help us and enable us and teach us to live in peace, because we're such an important race that, you know, we have to be helped to become who we really are. We are not important in the universe. I think we're important to God. I think we're important to the angelic presence. It values us because we still have freedom and spirituality alive in our own world, where it's died out in probably most big technological societies, or we never existed to begin with. So here we are, the native peoples of the world, walking around in circles about who's in our world. And when you begin to put together the clues of their behavior or lack of behavior, their lack of communication, you know, you're seeing they're planting the seeds for conquest. It's interesting when you talk to people in the Middle East, and my son and I have traveled in the Middle East quite a bit. You talk to people who have been colonized in colonized countries. When you ask them about something like this, you'll hear people say something like, oh, we're here to take over. Because that's what happens when you have more powerful technological societies now intervening in less technological societies from our own history. So in their mindset, that just would be the most logical thing to happen. For us, it's everything but that. It's everything. It has to be about us. It has to be about our fulfillment. It has to be about our evolution. But I'm telling you, people, they're here for the world. We're only useful to them. We don't matter beyond that. If you can put your arms around that, and for some people, that's just that's like their hair on fire, right? Just they go around with their hair on fire. And I know this is a huge challenge to how we want to see this and how we thought we could see it or should see it. But I think it empowers us as the native peoples of the world, because though they may rule the skies this moment, they don't rule the ground. And they can't win us over by force, because it's not allowed in this part of our universe. Something nobody on Earth knows about, but which the Allies of Humanity briefings reveals to us. That conquest is not allowed in this arena of life in the universe, because we live in the midst of huge trading networks that have, after millennia of conflict and degradation and failure, have put together these vast networks to create stability and survivability for large numbers of planets. And we just happen to be the independent planet in amongst all of these. But those races who want to see our world under their sphere of influence cannot take us by conquest. They have to win us over by guile and deception. They have to at least make us look like we're not resisting them. See what I mean? That's the rules of intervention in our part of the universe. And I know you can say, I don't believe that. Sure, you don't have to believe that. But it is part of the Allies briefings. And what it does is it makes sense out of the behavior of the intervention today, which is non-military, which is not using force, which is employing its influence of persuasion, discouragement, guile, everything, to hopeful, believing human beings who want to be rescued because we're in such ever-increasing dilemmas on Earth. So I want to present this very prosaic position, even though I'm a very spiritual person, and I each teach about greater community spirituality, which is not what I'm talking about here today. I'm talking about greater community survivability, which you have to survive the greater community before you can begin to evolve within it spiritually. And our challenge is surviving the greater community as we stand today. So I'll turn the mic over from here.
Hey, Marshall, may I jump in real quick? You know, kind of as I proposed this starting assessment of species to species contact with competitive intelligence, you know, you took it beautifully from there, I think. But I think one thing that would be good for you to talk about is, what are these species, you know, according to what you've received from this off-planet group of observers who call themselves the Allies of Humanity? You know, without understanding the environment that our world actually presently exists within, it is difficult to assess the nature of any visitor. You know, we can assess certain variables about, you know, them, their morphology, their craft, shape, size, what they tend to do in our human space, or what they seem to tend to do. But to get a full understanding of what they are, how many of them there are, and what type of force they are, like, what do they reflect from their environment? And so I think this is the collectives, if you'd like to just briefly talk about, from your perspective, who is actually in the world right now?
Okay, I'll do that succinctly. This is based upon my angelic work over many decades, and of course the Allies UMA briefings, which only occurred on four separate occasions with no contact in between. So I'm not hanging out with these folks. And these were given to me as a gift to humanity, not to replace our intelligence, but to amplify it and to fill in the spaces and gaps that do exist, because we're all earthbound and we do not know what life is like beyond our border, however much we may hope and believe and speculate about it. So who's here? These are basically resource explorers. The collectives represent multiple races, a hierarchically organized to serve in different functions and capacities, which is why you see different archetypes in extraterrestrials, as people report from direct encounters and observations and elsewhere. So they're here to map out the Earth for those who sent them here to do so. And they view us, we're probably, they understand our basic mentality, but who we are spiritually may be a mystery to them. They seem to have no spiritual dimension at all. The people who report their conversations and interactions with them, they seem cold, they seem remote, they seem unimpressed by anything we say or do. This is the abductee contact from their actual on the craft, which have been many, many reports, very similar to each other from all over the place, many different nations. And I have readers now in 92 countries, so I'm getting feedback from lots of different places on these kinds of subjects. Pardon me. So collectives are hired by large empire-type nations to go explore planets for their potential, not only for resources, but for potential for colonization. We are a colonization prospect, okay? And I'm taking it all the way with you people because, I mean, Reed is correcting a logos approach to this, but I'm kind of coming from the other angle of coming from this kind of position. And it's not what we want, hope, or believe, but it's the one thing that can unite a struggling humanity. We're not going to unite over diminishing resources. That could put us into ever greater conflict. We're not going to unite over religion and spirituality because we go in all directions as far as that goes. The one thing that can unite humanity is a threat to all of us equally, a threat to our freedom and to our existence here. And that's the most thing that most people do not want to hear. It's the thing they most would need to hear, because if we don't get that, then we're going in circles. We're beating around the bush while the alien agenda is carrying out its long-range plans here, winning over whole generations of people, establishing influence over individuals in positions of power in government, religion, and commerce, establishing its physical presence, mostly in oceans currently, and beginning to change the spiritual landscape of how we understand spirituality, and to create a sense of their spirituality. I don't even know if they have a spirituality, but it's spirituality that's in alignment with them. They are now the new saviors of humanity, come to save us from ourselves. This is their narrative to the people they take. It's the narrative. And how do I know this? Because I've spoken at many UFO conferences where I'm the only dissenting member of the speakers. Everyone else is a pro-intervention. It's almost like an enrollment process for people to get with the intervention and believe in them, even though they're not doing anything for anybody. And so, you know, I'm the dissenting voice. I'm the voice of, wait a minute, people, hold up. This, you just don't get on board and believe in a force that's not really doing anything, revealing anything. I mean, if they're really here to help us, they could have cured AIDS, they could have cured, they prevented the pandemic. They're not doing anything except maybe keeping some of their abductees alive. But, you know, that's not good enough, people. I'm sorry. There's nothing about this that bespeaks friendship or positivity in any realm, in my view, because I look at them from a practical standpoint. Now, from a spiritual standpoint, there are higher powers in the universe, definitely. But they don't go around investing themselves in other worlds for the purpose of either trying to change the world or take it over. The spiritually advanced universe are more monastic, more hidden, They don't operate in large networks of trade and commerce. They're not the ones who are going to come to our Earth presenting us with hope and belief and possibility. Meanwhile, they're undermining the foundation of our own societies and cultures, turning people against our own governments. This is a divide and conquer strategy, people. It's been around forever. So, I mean, we just have to really be careful and look at this thing from all angles. And I don't expect you to believe what I'm telling you, but to consider it is the wisest approach. If you neglect this, then we're just giving ourselves over, or we refuse to resist. And it's making the work of the intervention ever so much easier. So I'll turn this over again to whoever comes next.
Hey, Marshall, thank you so much. Reed, I'll let you respond, and then I want to let Dr. Brandenburg finally introduce himself.
Yep. Yeah, thanks. Just a couple things, Marshall. You know, you kind of brought up the old adage for me, better safe than sorry. You could say, oh, that's way too basic or human-centric to think in this setting. But I think safety is an issue here. I think there's a lot of indication that the contact occurring is not safe. Okay, people are being taken against their will. Crimes, according to any human court of law, are being committed, including aggravated assault, rape, murder, certainly abduction and disappearance. So, I mean, if that's happening, better safe than sorry, I would say for sure. So I just wanted to make that point. I also want to kind of voice the response that some might be having to this idea of colonization, of some sort of aggressive intent to kind of prospect our world and undertake some deep, dark agenda. You know, there is a lot of behavior that denotes that intent, I believe. But people might ask, you know, well, if they wanted to do that, they would have done it already. They would have done it early in the game. If they wanted to either attack us, supplant us, eliminate us, you know, they have not done that. They have not demonstrated overt aggression on a mass scale. And so therefore, and this is the big and therefore I hear all the time, I think there's a lot of logical fallacy in that argument. You know, it's very possible that this force, given it being potentially small in size, having numerically much the disadvantage, not being local and having a base of operations early on the ground, but being far from their supply lines, you could say, would engage in a much deeper, longer form of incursion and alteration, and you could say conflict or aggression. And I think we need to start to think like that. Like you mentioned, Marshall, this is not a Star Wars scenario. This is not, you know, hit the other on the head and take what they have. This is some sort of programmatic involvement in our world that possibly is a script that was written long ago. It's been played out maybe other times in other places. It's been refined. And it is engaging with us in a very specific set of ways that are consistent across human history and the human social space, you know, country to country. And so just to consider that, you know, they may want the world. They just may not destroy us and take it. They may just be engaging in a whole other set of nuanced strategies that are so deep, long-term, that they're very difficult on any single human being's timescale of survival in terms of their own self-interest to ever perceive. And I think that makes a lot of sense. If I were them, that's what I would do. I wouldn't be overt and land on the White House lawn, or arouse all sorts of alarm and concern and interest, and then have to manage that. Rather, study us extensively, collect our human data set, run that through the algorithms, build the AI machine to enact a program that messages us according to our psychology, take people, create the substrate of biology that from which you can grow some sort of other life form or adjusted life form, create the worker you need, don't just educate the worker you need, and do so in a fashion that is so deep and long-term, it's almost impossible to discern, especially given our own, you know, our own human tendencies toward ridicule of the unknown and everything else we've got going on the earth. So, you know, no, they're not attacking us overtly. It could be another strategy, process of prospecting,
of gaining access to worlds and their resources and using the local pop.
Losing you here, Reedy.
We got him back.
Wonderful.
I think I am back. I think I had a mic issue. The mic stole my speaker, so I'm back.
Yep, it happens if you lose signal on the phone call.
To what degree do you think that human commercial activity is dictated by, controlled, or impacted by non-human intelligence, and in what specific ways? And again, thank you all for what you do.
Marshall, you want to take that, or want me to have a whack at it?
Why don't you have a whack at it, and then I will comment afterward.
Okay, great. Well, you know, Marshall and I, we try to keep our fingers out of certain arenas that are super speculative and that simply we just do not have intel on. And I wouldn't name any specific technologies myself. I know the UFO community has a lot of suspicions around a lot of different things. In my mind, the intervention would want to utilize existing force generated by humans in our own space for their behalf. So it's kind of like in judo, you know, you convert the energetic movement of your opponent and redirect it for your own ends. So in that sense, the intervention, in our view, is not like the source or like the creator of a lot of what we see per se. I'm sure it is the creator of some of what we see. And I'm talking about wars, geopolitical events, economic crises, climate events, all that. So we don't pin a lot of that to the intervention in a causative kind of way. We definitely look for the power dynamic because, you know, the intervention is really about power. And they're operating through channels of power in our world. And the Allies do talk about that, how basically they are a hierarchical set of organizations that operate with a hive mind. And so wherever that can be continued in via existing government, economy, so forth, society, they would probably seek to use that. So they're using our existing, pre-existing kind of human trends for their own purposes. I would say they're definitely planting certain seeds, certain technological seeds that might kind of sprout and grow the forest, so to speak, that they need ultimately as kind of the tech ecosystem that would support their overall agenda and the way they operate, you know, because they have a very rigid operative model. It's what how the Allies painted. And I think there's indication of that as well in terms of what we can observe. They are inflexible. This is pure playbook intervention. These are not innovative, creative forces that sit around a board table and kind of like, you know, do like an agile approach where everybody stands up and gives the 5 minute on their division of Earth intervention. This is hive mind operating in super well laid plans. But they ultimately need the kind of tech, social, psycho ecosystem in which they can function and thrive. And so I think I wouldn't be surprised if they've dropped a few little trinkets, you know, in the human space, and let those kind of flourish and grow. I won't myself subjectively guess as to exactly what those are. But I think it's just important to know that they're using what already exists in the world. They're turning up the volume on the music we're already playing. And then they're turning down the volume on certain other, you know, signals that are present in the world, all to kind of shape in a way that's really difficult to put a causative relationship to them. And I think that makes perfect sense. Marshall, do you want to jump into?
Yeah, I think of it also another way that they're investing in human conflict, but not to the point of really massively degrading the world. I mean, they want to make the most powerful nations weaker. And one of the ways you do that is through intractable conflicts that just go on and on and on, and that are led by people who may have been contacted by the intervention in some way. I can't really speculate about that, but they do very stupid ongoing things in protracted conflicts. So I did a piece of writing about how religious fanaticism is being fostered by the intervention. And while it is inherent in certain religious traditions and can be fomented by cultural and economic conditions, it serves the intervention that human conflict continues to degrade societies that have the power or the ability to stand in its way. And so we've seen that certainly since World War II, increasingly with time, that these conflicts are just being perpetuated and continued. So I think that, you know, they want to benefit from us losing confidence in our speakers. You know, I've spoken at a couple of conspiracy conferences, and I was amazed at the presenters there claiming to have UFO contacts assisting them. And it really, this was years ago, but it really told to me that they are feeding into the psychology of division, to disengage us from the norms of society, to disengage us from the traditional power structures that we have, which, you know, are tend to be corrupt, but still they are ours. And they are fomenting the kind of psychology that makes us ever less able to make pure decisions on our own, like the fomenting of AI, for example, which doesn't give you choice. It gives you what to choose from, basically. And that would definitely play into their program. And you see these factors going on now where people are becoming seemingly less and less able to make determinations or come to conclusions. Everything is everybody's opinion. Everything is whatever you think it is. There's nothing really true out there. It's just how you perceive it. These are all narratives that disengage people from their core intelligence, which is not just our intellect, but a deeper knowledge that we all carry, that was given to us by the creator of all life, actually. And the more we become disengaged with that, the more we become products of society. We become controlled by society and cultural values or political movements and so forth. So people become less intelligent in the face of these things, less able to think on their own, think originally, have original thoughts. We're being programmed to think along certain lines, both for economic reasons, but also to serve larger agendas that are in motion in the world. And I think this control of what we think, how we think, and what we choose between represents one of the greatest threats to humanity at this time, and can be perpetrated and supported almost invisibly by the presence of the intervention in the world today. They will win us over or defeat us from having the will to resist. That's, you know, we go back to since, you know, the ancient Chinese teaching about, you know, the best strategy is to have your opponent unwilling or unable to resist. So they are disengaging us from the kind of core technology that gives us insight, strength, and determination, even against difficult situations, even up against serious odds. And so we become ever more reflective of one another, ever more thinking along certain cultural lines that are now being spawned and supported, you know, by industry and commerce, certainly, but for other reasons as well. So I see this happening, and this is why I teach the way of knowledge. It's one of the core things that I teach. It's the core of greater community spirituality, is that we have a deeper mind that is here to prepare us to do our greater work in the world that is not governed by politics or culture or personal preference. But once we become mature enough to access, to value it and find a way to access it, then we begin to live a different kind of life, a more of a mission kind of life, a life that is service-oriented and is not easily persuaded or dissuaded by anything around us, including the presence of foreign races in our world. The control of the mental environment, however, is one of their big agendas, and I think that's something we really have to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways we can do that, and I just want to add this thought, when we think about these things, it's really important to be objective. Objective means you're seeing, pure objectivity is seeing without preference or seeing without desiring an outcome or a preferred outcome, which is difficult to do. I mean, if you're used to thinking in a preferred way and looking at everything preferentially, then thinking that with that kind of objectivity is difficult, but I think it's really necessary. For example, you know, because I've taught in the realm of spirituality for so many years, I had to deal with people's notion of love and fear. And what I want to say about love and fear is to see something clearly, you cannot, it's not about being loving or about being fearful. That's subjective and usually self-congratulatory. Real love is something else. Real fear is something else. To look clearly is to see clearly without imposing that kind of value system on your perception. And we need to look clearly regarding this intervention. Its behavior denotes its intent. Okay? Unless you want to try to make it into something self-gratifying or self-fulfilling, or it's going to give you what you think, you know, humanity should have and we can never make for ourselves, that's thinking very ambitiously. That's not thinking clearly. So this thinking clearly is just the most important thing. And when you think clearly, it also opens you up to your core spirituality, which is this power of knowledge within you. Because it thinks clearly. It's absolutely not influenced by culture, society, or any form of power in the physical universe. And it's not, yeah. You can't use it as a tool. It can speak through you and guide you, but you cannot use it as a tool to get what you want. So this is the greater power that we all have that cannot be dissuaded, persuaded. It cannot be subjected. It cannot be won over by any kind of force, be it human or otherwise.
Hey, Marshall.
This is the great power that we all carry. Yes.
If I can just jump in real quick, and I know there's other questions, but I think this matter of technology is really key. And one thing the allies advocate against is over technology or excessive development of technology. Why? Because it actually inhibits the aspects of our intelligence that relate to perception of objective reality. Too much technology can get in the way. And if anything, the intervention might be over technologizing our society or advocating for that. So just a thought there. It's not just about what they introduce to our detriment. It's what they introduce that basically inhibits our strength, you know, that prevents our perception of them. And sometimes that has nothing to do specifically with them. And the allies basically talk about, you know, in the mental environment, the energization of our existing human thought space, you know, turning up that temperature and making people feel more agitated, more anxious, even more emotional. Not that any of that has anything to do with the intervention. It's signal and noise. And if you can increase the noise, the signal may not even have to be decreased. So I'll stop there. I know there's other questions.
Hey, Marshall and Reed and Ulrich and Fringe. I'm coming from an adversarial point of view compared to you guys. So I'm your adversaries, okay? You talk about being objective, but I don't see objectivity. I see a lot of assumptions, like secrecy implies nefariousness. I also look at the fact that most abductees come away from their experience feeling opened up, feeling expanded in awareness, and they don't regret the experience. So it was not a traumatic experience for them. There are a small percentage who are, who do feel traumatically injured or upset. The other thing is, I look at our world today, and its trajectory is dismal. It looks like we're heading towards World War III. I don't see adults in the room, and the only adults that I'm thinking might exist are above us. And also, I have the question, do you believe in Jesus? Now, I'm not a religious man, but I look at religious texts, and I try to determine whether they really happened, whether these are true stories. And if they are, then this man, Jesus, has been given all authority over the planet. Do you really think that a man with that much power, and I do think it is technological power that he wields, but it is very, very high. Do you really believe that he would just stand by and watch the genocide, which is what you guys are talking about, a controlled, planned genocide of all humans on Earth to replace them with these hybrids Do you really believe these hybrids are going to feel good about that?
Hey, Larry. So a few things. You know, I think there's assumptions on both sides of the aisle, but there are what I would call responsible assumptions. And so secrecy relating to a visitor in our space, in our house, an intruder who came in the door unannounced and without permission, their secrecy, I think, needs to be responsibly assumed to be a risk and a potential threat. It certainly cannot responsibly be assumed to be an act of beneficence, I would argue. Regarding abductees, Harvard physicist John Mack did a study. 67% of abductees reported having negative experiences. 33% reported positive experiences. So this whole narrative about most abductees come away with a good experience, I'm not so sure about that. I don't think that's been demonstrated, and actually the opposite has been demonstrated. And then just to clarify, Marshall and I are definitely not talking about genocide. We're not talking about an elimination scenario. We're talking about an integration scenario. But the interests that are being represented in that, those of the NHI, we're arguing are counter to our own, and that this will alter what it means to be human in ways that we do not advocate. So I just wanted to correct those three things.
Larry, does that help you out, or do you have a follow-up?
I have a follow-up. So if you're not talking about genocide, you're talking about bringing a psionically advanced being into a population with non-psionically advanced humans. Which ones do you think are going to fare well? And the end result of that is that it's a genocide, because all human beings are now gone. They don't measure up. They're not as pretty. They're not as psionically have those capabilities. They're going to feel inferior. And you think that's going to work? No, it's not going to work. Either they're going to bring us up to their level, or we're never going to be with them. But there's never going to be this living side by side. Doesn't work.
Oh, I agree with that. I don't think their intention is to cohabitate in as equal partners of this world. And if by psionic you mean extraordinary powers of psychic ability, yes, they do possess those, and they would prefer to maintain hegemony in those capabilities. And I don't think that they're giving us those capabilities, even if they may let us in on a few tips and tricks, just like technology. They may give a few trinkets from space, but they're not going to give the key knowledge about how to undertake interstellar travel until we're a junior partner in the firm. But by then, we're not the same people we used to be.
Thank you. Othello, did you want to jump in?
Yes, I would. Thank you. Can you all hear me?
Yep, you sound great.
Awesome. Thank you. Reed and Marshall, it's an honor and a privilege to speak to you both. I've been waiting for this moment for many years. I just have a couple questions. I could probably ask you 1,000, but I won't. But my first question is, how are we doing? How are we doing in terms of human opinion about intervention, about its understanding about the extraterrestrial presence, about our spiritual development? Do you see the needle moving in a positive direction, either in your personal communication with the beyond, or in, you know, what you've observed in people you've spoken to? I guess I'm looking for a status report, because from where I'm sitting, we're at an extreme disadvantage. We're a scrappy group of dedicated, hopeful people who believe that the world is going in a direction that is not in human interest. And I don't know where to look to see signs that we're getting it right or that we're improving things. So just maybe speak to that a little bit.
Marshall, why don't you be the first?
You know, most people don't know what to do with this or have an opinion about it. They're taken up in the world. Many people are laboring under extreme poverty or political, religious oppression. People in the world just don't want to hear certain things. But that doesn't mean that life isn't moving. And we have a destiny in the universe, and that destiny is going to begin with us having to deal with intervention. So I'm not homeocentric in the sense that I don't think we have a destiny in the universe. And, you know, if people can be given opportunity to understand what is going on, many more people are going to come forth, and we've seen that happen. We're late in the game. There's no doubt about that. But this is a long game. It's not going to be over in 5 years. It's not going to be over in 10 years. So we have time, but not a lot of time. And the people who can respond to this responsibly and begin to become pro-human in the face of intervention can play lots of different roles and have a great part in strengthening the human family. But we are going to be facing environmental breakdown. We are going to be facing economic contraction. These are realities that we are facing and will face. So that can bring people closer together, or it can set them against each other. So there's a lot of unknowns in the journey ahead. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm here to do a mission. I'm on a mission. And some of you may feel that way about yourself, too, even if that mission is not yet clarified for yourself. And whether things look good or bad in the moment is not going to deter you from the mission. It might give you an opportunity to speak about things or address certain problems that are immediate. But, you know, I'm in this for the long game. And I think Reed is in this for the long game. And some of you present here are in this for the long game. I think what's important here is we have to get clear about who is in the world, why they're in the world, what it means, and how we should respond. And if we're still lost in the weeds, or we're still beating around the bush, we're still hoping and praying it's a good thing, we are not responding in a way that's going to empower us or make us able to be of service to other people in a meaningful way. So this is really about human responsibility. And if we lose that ability to respond, which can happen from many different sources, both human and otherwise.
Apparently it did.
No, it's not over yet. You don't drop the ball.
Should I click it again?
The game is just beginning. You don't drop the ball. So here we are, and we have the journey ahead for us. And it's real, and it's big, and it's important.
Should we do one more question, Reed?
Yeah, I can. And let me just piggyback on Marshall there. You know, it's a great question, Othello, and it's I would say it's a rough picture. I would say I can't determine the needle moving very, very much in any direction, in the sense of calling this out for what it is or what it probably is. However, I do see some hope on the horizon that if disclosure can increasingly occur, maybe not even solely by government military contractors, but out in the public, which is, I think, what a lot of people in this space are about. You know, they're about bringing out the human NHI interface. If more of that can come forward, if we can make a few responsible assumptions and shift from possibility to probability, I think where we land is that we are being probably visited by physical aliens. And if that were the case, there are a set of very logical, responsible, and cautious starting points that I would advocate we adopt. Now, if that can increasingly, that dialogue occur, and people can, you know, do their walk around of the phenomenon and kind of land on some square, maybe like that. And again, I'm not trying to drive everyone to that outcome, but I do advocate that as a starting assessment. I think there's the possibility that government can corroborate that instead of disclose it. And a little bit more disclosure from the right people about a physical alien visitation, with people beginning to think in logical ways about physical alien visitation, could create a scenario where it's not just a few thousand of us on Twitter, it's 100 million people. And that 100 million human people are thinking like human beings. They're thinking like humans that are being discovered by non-humans. And it's not to say they're excluding all possibilities in the universe, but they're starting in the right place. And I would love to see that. And I think there's hope for that.
Thank you, Reed. I did want to ask you, what do you think is causing this this analysis paralysis, for lack of a better term?
Oh, that's a huge one. Well, let's see. I think, you know, a number of kind of early dynamics got set in train that are still underway today. And one of them I could summarize as E.T. good, government bad. You know, the secrecy that followed Roswell
and all the attempts to deny, obfuscate, ridicule have created this dynamic that this assumed dynamic, but it's actually quite deep, that the government is the bad actor. They're the ones keeping us away from, and here comes the opposite side of the coin, the good stuff. And the good stuff is, it all sits in the ET side of the ring, right? We assume. And it's just not that. It is just so not that. and yet this is a very deeply entrenched thing for folks. I think that's one thing operative. I think this other thing of opening up the aperture to entertain possibilities early in one's inquiry, very important, but the inability to close the aperture and focus, and not having enough people help others through the cognitive process of making sense of this event. So people just stay in possibility the whole way. And of course, possibility has other advantages that kind of hack our human neurology, like novelty, novel new information, and many other fields suffer from this. Like, for example, the preponderance of health fads when, you know, I mean, it's pretty highly established certain behavioral truths about eating and exercise and sleeping and hydration, but everyone wants the newest, next shiny thing. And so I think that love for the next shiny thing, especially in this shiny UFO space, is another contributor. I think those elements of the defense establishment that have been trying to either collaborate with the alien presence or to resist it on their own terms in the background have done quite a number on the human species. And I think that might be beginning to dawn just how much damage was caused there by the attempt to kind of manage this behind the curtain. So those are three, but great question. That's a whole space right there.
Yeah, it's the kind of stuff that makes my head want to explode because I've never come across a group of people who are, nothing can be known. Everything is unknown. It's all, we just can't know it. So it's fascinating to me. I want to make sure Othello actually gets to everything that he wanted to say before we let Reed and Marshall go. Othello, were you finished?
I could be finished at any time. The core of my question, that was the urgent need that I felt that I need to ask, and it was a personal question that I was asking more for myself almost than anyone else, so selfishly, thank you for letting me do that. I guess I could ask one follow-up question that maybe is more conducive to group discussion, which has to do with the allies themselves, this sort of mysterious but beneficial, potentially beneficial group who had been observing us, but are bound by, you know, high moral standing not to intervene, but for also good reasons as well. Is there a future where they would in some way intervene? And I mean intervene in the most benign sense, like sending a signal to our satellite system, you know, flashing lights at a distance, you know, in a pattern that all of humanity can see, that the intervention can't intercept, these types of interventions. Are any of those on the table, or are these naive questions that the intervention would easily be able to prevent from happening?
Marshall, I can address that. Well, remember, the allies are a group of observers from several different planets whose own worlds had undergone an intervention very similar to our own. And so they were helped by unseen forces during their times and periods of conflict, in some cases, which was very extreme. And so they're now bound to provide that service themselves to us, not just only to us, but to some other world or worlds that are undergoing the same kind of intervention experience as their first direct encounter with intelligent life in the universe on a large scale. So I don't think they're in a position to interfere. I don't think they seek to interfere, because then they have to take responsibility for maintaining interference, to becoming a co-operative or co-combatant in a situation on Earth where humanity is going to have to speak up for itself. We have the power to ward off intervention because conquest is not allowed here. And if it looks like we are in complete denial, a revolution against that, or significant revolution against that, the intervention now, its plans become much more difficult to achieve, and they would eventually have to withdraw. This is what the allies say, okay? So we have the power of authority. We're just not using that authority. We don't have the awareness to have that authority. We don't have it spiritually. We don't have it internally. We don't have it practically regarding the presence of the intervention in the world today. So this is, you know, it begins with education and awareness. And this is, we're in the period of education and awareness. And that's what, you know, we're doing outside the government. You know, we're wasting our time trying to beat that door down.
Yeah, because, Marshall.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry, Marshall. I wanted to add, but not interrupt.
Oh, it's just that, you know, the Allies of Humanity is a service to humanity. But really, what we need to know is what we can see and know about this based on what's happened already, which paints a very clear picture if you're willing to look at it clearly. You can't turn this into something you want to be good if everything it does really isn't good. And so there has to be some recognition here, or we're just, you know, living in confusion, and you can't have preference regarding this. You can't be what you want it to be. The universe does not respond to that. You know, you can't create this reality. It is a reality, and you either respond to it or you don't. And if you don't respond, then that's one less person who is unwilling or unable to respond to a situation that can change the whole world, which we're undergoing right now. So the power is in our hands. No one's going to come and save us. No one is going to come and, you know, drive away the intervention. We have to do that. That's almost like a rite of passage. If we're going to become a free and self-determined people in the universe, which would create a world very different than the world we're looking at right now, by the way. And the fourth set of briefings in the Allies talks about what that could look like, not necessarily would look like, but could look like, which would be very, very different than what we see today. So it will take challenge to us to make us rise this occasion. And we have to rise this occasion if we're going to be a free people in the universe going into the future.
Marshall, if I may add a couple things to that, many people don't know, but the Allies' mission that brought the four briefings, per what they say about themselves and you know, through your contacts with them, was actually the second of two missions. The first mission was partially terminated due to the intervention finding them, identifying them, and actually forcing them to self-terminate. And so when the second mission came after the first set of briefings, pretty much right away, they said that their briefings brought attention upon them from the intervention and forced them to actually flee our solar system. And all their remaining brief, actually the second book, I believe, was given on the eve of their flight. But this third and fourth book were given outside the solar system for this reason. So it just, you know, I mean, this is what the Allies say has happened to them. And that's just maybe a grain of salt to take with the thought of, why don't they just send a signal? Why don't they say what worlds they're from? Why don't they land and do something? It's like we should really think about how competing or complementary intents would function in the same space. You know, can an aggressor can a beneficial intent function alongside an aggressive intent in the same space? Or do they go? Are they reduced to their lowest common denominator, which is aggression? And if the beneficials are not set up for aggression, if they're not military in nature, and if they don't want to have their whole the spirit of their mission altered, then they cannot necessarily confront the aggressor, lest they become one themselves. And so, you know, for that reason, it sounds like the Allies have retreated from basically any spatial environment around the Earth, including the solar system, or even the very farthest edges of the Kuiper Belt, for example, because they cannot function in their intent alongside an aggressor like this. And I think the story that they tell kind of highlights exactly why they were not able to overtly help or provide a signal that that might reveal who they are, where they're from, and or their current position. And then, of course, you know, any signal that they would provide may not necessarily be unifying. It may not necessarily provide evidence that there's a beneficial ally. And so this is, you know, our inability to decode signal is a big problem here. It's like, you know, in the Native people's analogy, there's many ships out in the bay, and they're all flying different flags. And I think it's a little hazardous to think that we can decode the meaning of those flags and identify friend from foe.
And, you know, as a result, a beneficial form of life might have to retreat and to provide an incontrovertible situation where we can say, okay, you know what, any alien presence in the world today needs to first retreat and then engage us properly according to our rules of engagement and the ethics of contact that we human beings articulate. And then from there, we negotiate access to our solar system, to our world. You know, that might be truthfully the only way.
You know, it's the Alice briefings, and I hope that you will all take the opportunity to read them. They're not very long. They're very rich. But before you come to any final assessment on your own, because they're very compassionate. They're saying, here's what you must know, some of which you cannot know, given that you're still stuck on the surface of your world, that will create a clear picture for you. It's not ambiguous. It's not happening at different levels. It's not like a spiritual, it's not a spiritual battle. It's a physiological battle. It's a resource battle. It's life itself on the most fundamental and basic levels. And so we as human beings have a long history of intervention. We have a long history of the difficulty of establishing free societies, which only occur in certain places in the world today. So we can have appreciation for these things. And they also talk about, you know, what restrains them. Even their home planets, they can't even mention their home planets because, as you will read in these briefings, they represent the free nations in our region of space who, by contract, are not allowed to interfere with the activities of the larger trade networks in order for their freedom to be secured and not to be intervened with. So it's a very complex situation, which they actually describe in the course of their briefings, which gives you an idea that they are here without official guidance from their governments. They're doing this as a service to humanity because of the guidance of higher spiritual powers, basically.
Marshall and Reed, I want to end this space gracefully. And Dr. B, thank you for enduring so much. Are all three of you down for a continued space, one where there's way fewer technical issues?
Yeah, perhaps. And I do have to go as well.
Yeah,
I appreciate this, and I'm just grateful you all hung in there. This is, you know, this is really important to everybody, I'm sure, for certain reasons. And we all have been sent into the world for a certain purpose, and this purpose has to do with where we are and where we're going. Beyond our own pursuit of happiness, our own preferential way of seeing things, there's a deeper purpose for us being here, and this may call it out of us as we proceed.
And Marshall and Reed, thank you so much. We'll be in touch with you, and we have so many more questions for Dr. Brandenburg and for both of you. So hopefully we can do a part two. And one. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone.
Have a great afternoon, everyone.
Thank you to the hosts. Appreciate you all.
We'll be in touch for sure.